We're going to take a look at Parshat Shmot. And Parshat Shmot, you guys already hit the nail on the head. One of the curious characters, not one, but two of the curious characters who appear in the Parasha are the Mialdot HaIvriot, Shifra and Puah. And as Jason pointed out, and as everybody pointed out, we've all grown up with the impression that the Mialdot HaIvriot are that Ivriot is an adjective defining the Mialdot, that they are Hebrew women. Their names are Shifra and Puah, and famously the Gemara in Sota says that Shifra and Puah are either Isha Uvita or Isha V'chalata. So it's either Yocheved and Miriam or Yocheved and Elishava, and then explaining why this one's called Shifra, one's called Puah. But of course, this is very difficult in Pshat, and the first simple reason is because Shifra and Puah are Egyptian names. I mean, they just are, so it's a little hard to do that unless you say that you have stately, important women from this very important family who have taken Egyptian names, which then, of course, flies in the face of a whole other Midrashic tradition, which is that they kept their names. But we'll leave that for right now. I want to pose a whole different question here, which is one of neighborhood. Where were Bnei Yisrael living in Mitzrayim? Living in Goshen. What was the purpose of living in Goshen? In other words, living in Goshen was something that was arranged for them. Why were they set up to live in Goshen?
Well, the original reason was that they were shepherds and they were
right. And why did Yosef insist that they tell Paro that they were shepherds? So he'd have them live in Goshen. The idea was be far away from the Egyptian cultural center, etc. However, by the time we get to the actual Exodus story, and it's already in this week's parasha, at the Sneh, in the very last pasuk of Perek Gimel, Hashem says to Moshe, V'shala isha mishchenta u'migarat beita. A woman will ask or borrow, depending how we understand what shala means, from her neighbor and from the woman who lives in her house, gold and silver, etc. Which means that at some point now, the Jews and the Egyptians are living in an integrated neighborhood. And an integrated neighborhood may even be living in each other's homes. But so the integrated neighborhood. And that, of course, takes us famously to Makat Bechorot, with the blood on the doors, like Jewish home, skip it. Egyptian home, strike it, like that. So they're not living in some separate area. So how did that happen? What's the process by which that happened? I just want to put that on the back burner. We're going to come back to it. But I want... Yeah?
Isn't there also a Midrash? And when you grew up in a non-Orthodox household, it's much easier to ignore Midrash. But isn't there a Midrash about the darkness only goes in Goshen?
No, that's right there on the Pasuk.
Right,
so none of us ignore it. Right.
So,
well, the Choben Israel Haya Orba Moshe Votam. The question is, what does it mean? Haya Orba Moshe Votam. Does it mean that, like, there's an area that's lighted and an area that's dark, and the area that's lighted is the Jewish neighborhood or the Jewish part of the country? Or does it mean that the Jewish homes had light in them, and then you're going to say it was the default light and that the darkness was the plague, or was the default a plague of darkness, and the light was the unusual thing? You could say it that way. Moshe Votam seems to support what you're saying, and the picture that we seem to get from the Makot is that the Jews are kind of living separately, and yet from Makat Bechorot and from this whole scene, it seems that they're actually living together. So it seems that both are kind of true. There may be like a major Jewish settlement away, but the Jews have become integrated. The question is how that happened. So I want to put that on the back burner because we're going to get back to it later. What I want to show you is the passage that we're going to focus on, which is, again, about the Mialdot. And, again, the question of the Mialdot Hebrew women, Mialdot HaIvriot, which I think really is a very hard thing to accept for the simple reason that why would Paro entrust a job like that to Jewish women and be surprised they're not fulfilling it, right? What? Yeah, but he's not saying, you know, that there's Egyptian taskmaster standing over them and kill the children. He's having them do it secretly. And then when he finds out that they're doing it, he's saying, why aren't you doing it?
Well,
it's kind of strange.
Were they just supposed to identify and hand over the baby?
No, they were supposed to kill him. That's what it says.
They themselves.
Yeah, and it says, why are you letting them live? Right? So it's difficult. I appreciate that the majority perspective is Mialdot HaIvriot, is that they are in themselves Ivriot. There is the Abravanel's opinion that Mialdot Ivriot means Mialdot Etta Ivriot, the Egyptian women with Egyptian names, which explains why Paro is in charge, is entrusting them, and that they are Hamialdot Etta Ivriot. And there are several things to support that besides that particular contention and the issue of the trust. Notice what it says, and let's take a look at the passage, and then I'll point out what the exegetical difficulty is that we're going to focus on, but it's actually going to open up some more doors for us. We take a look in source one, and source one is 100% translated. So the first question you have to think about is, we already read, Bnei Yisrael paru v'yishutzu v'yibu v'yantzu. Bnei Yisrael had a population explosion. We don't know how big, but we know that there's a population explosion. If there's a population explosion, that means that we see lots of pregnant women. Now, how do you have two mialdot for that whole group? What does that mean? Sounds like, you know, they got these two midwives. Well, what does that mean? So that's why some people suggest that they are the head women are in charge of the whole thing. But if they're in really that position, then how are they in a position to kill the babies? They're not the ones who are actually birthing them. They're the ones who are delegating. But so it's a very difficult passage, and we're going to put that as another question on the back burner, and all of these are going to come back to by the end of the year.
You had that in the concentration camps. Couples.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the issue of how can you say that she's the one who's head officer of birthing, and there's two of them, and there's really they have 1,000 midwives under them, but then they aren't in a position to do a parawast anyways, right? Okay. Vayomer, biyaled chen eta ivriot, when you help to birth the Hebrew women, uritan al ha'ovnayim. And a few years ago we had a shiur on the ovnayim and what that is. But at some point when the baby is either it's in utero or being born, imben huva miten otov mati v'chaya. And again, it's not hand him over, it's kill him. If it's a boy, kill him. If it's a girl, let her live. And then vatire'enna ha'mialdot eta Elohim. The mialdot feared Elohim. It's important to note that the fear of Elohim is something that we find elsewhere, dafka within the context of Egypt, and dafka within a non-Hebraic context, as being somebody who has respect for a general divine morality and won't do something immoral. And that, of course, is the case of Yosef and Mrs. Potiphar. When Mrs. Potiphar continues to pester Yosef to sleep with him, sleep with her, he says, Elohim, which of course is a generic name for God, it's not a personal name of God, it means divinity. So it would be a sin against divinity for me to do this immoral thing. So we're not talking about ritual law or anything. And so therefore, the context here is much more of a generic Egyptian context than if they're Hebrews, they would say, Elohei Abraham, Elohei Avihem, or something of that sort. It doesn't say that. So it's some support for the Abravanel. And what happens? They keep the Batrayan Atayiladim. And so now, Batikram Elach Mitzvah Mamiyodot, Bairmalahem, Adwasitam Navar Zev, Batrayan Atayiladim. So he said, why'd you do this? Tomara Mialdot El Paro. So Mialdot say to Paro, Kiloch Anashim HaMitzviot HaIvriot. Meaning the Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian women, meaning, Kichayotena. And Chayotena, simple pshat, means they are their own midwives. Meaning they don't need a midwife to give birth. Before the actual midwife comes, they've already given birth. And by the way, evidently, Paro did not expect these mialdot to take a living boy who had already been born and kill him. In other words, the notion was that somehow, either beforehand or during the birth process, kind of do a oops. But to go around and say, oh, it's a boy, kill him, he wasn't at that. So their point was, that and they're lying, because that's not what they did, but they say to Paro that that's what they're able to do, and therefore we don't have a chance to kill them. And now what happens? Vayetev Elohim lamialdot, God treats the mialdot well. Vayirev ha'am, the nation expands or explodes in the population. Vayatzumiyot, they become very mighty. And now, vayikir otam mialdot, kiyaru ha'mialdot et Elohim. And since, or as a result of the Mialdot's fear of God, Vayas lahem batim. And those are the three words that are the pregnant words here, sorry for the pun, and that we got to deal with, which is vayas lahem batim means he made houses for them. And every one of those words is difficult. Vayas, what's the question? Who made it? Who made the houses? Now, what would your instinctive reaction be based on the sentence?
Hashem.
Right, because it says, Vayhi ke'aru hamadot et Elohim, they feared God, so God made them houses. Maybe. On the other hand, who is the subject in this whole conversation? It's the maldot and whom?
Paro.
What is lahem? Vayas lahem batim means?
Male.
Problem is, lahem, it should say, if it's for the maldot, it should say... Lahen, because it's female. Now, we're not super bothered by that because Tanakh occasionally will be a little flexible. By the way, never in the other direction, but sometimes when there's a group of women, it'll be with a masculine ending. And the most famous example is when Miriam leads the women to go out and sing at Kriyat Yam Suf, it says, Vata'an Lahem Miriam. Miriam responds, right, and gets them to sing. Even with lahem, even though we assume it's all women.
You don't think it's a baby house or something?
What?
You don't think it's a baby house.
What do you mean?
You said that they would not take a living baby.
No, we're just, let's stay with the problem of lahem. So, think of it in a second. I just want to make sure we've got each piece, because each word. So lahem seems to be the mialdot, but the language, but so we could maybe live with that. Is that who he made it for? And the last question is, what are batim? What does batim mean? So what is the word? How would you translate the word batim?
Houses.
So who made houses for whom, and what are houses? If houses are buildings, then what word would we expect to be the verb?
Bana.
What?
Bana.
Vayivem lahem batim. Right?
Well,
you build a house.
Lineage,
what?
Unless it's something related.
Unless by it is not a physical house. Right? Good. And famously, what does... Rashi said, and we're going to see it, Rashi, because we've all grown up with Rashi on Parshat Shemot. What does Rashi say about Vayas Lahem Batim? All right, so we're going to see it inside in Source 8. But I just want to point out that that one little phrase of three words, every one of the words is problematic. Now, Sam, would you want to ask?
No, I was going to say that I was trying to understand what you said before, that if they say the babies are born early, and they come walk in there, and there's a live baby, not during birth, but born early, they would not kill that baby.
Right. Paro said, as they're born.
Okay.
Which means Paro's not expecting them to go around and kill babies. He's expecting them
make a distinction between a baby that's actually out of the mother's womb and one that's coming up.
What, that only while birthing, if you see it's a boy, kill him. But not afterwards. That's pretty clear from the text. All right? And Paro at no point says, well, so what if they already gave birth? He doesn't say that. He accepts their words, right? So we got to figure out what's going on, these three words. And these three words, like I said, are going to open up a whole lot of floodgates of other information for us. And the next thing that happens was we assume is Paro acting in frustration. And so what does he do? He goes from the private cover-up decree that he gives to the midwives to a public decree, Vayitzav Paro l'chol amon l'mor, again, the same policy of keep the girls alive, kill the boys, but now it's living boys, not while in birth, and now it's everybody, and you see, find a Jewish kid, if it's a boy, throw him in the river and kill him. Okay, so we have to figure out what's going on. We're going to start from the easiest place to start when you have a phrase in Tanakh which is obscure, which is ambiguous, and equivocal, right? It can, Vayas could be one of two. Lahem is a little strange, who for whom, and what Batimar. So we'll go to the oldest translation we have, right? The oldest translation we have is Septuagint, source 5. All right, anybody want to read? Okay, good. All right, but the main thing is that the last three, the last six words is Payaton Theon, God made. Epoisan Autais Hoikais, which means he made houses for them. which means the only thing that we know is that the Septuagint takes the position that, actually, no, Theon here is that they feared God. He made houses for them. Again, we don't know who, we don't know what for whom, and we don't, it's again, just a straight translation, doesn't help us at all.
Maybe it's symbolic, the house of Septuagint.
But we, again, we don't know. Take a look at the next source. The next source is Targum Unkos. Take the much later Targum. Va'ava kad dechila chayatim in kadam Adonai, va'avad lohon batin is a simple straight translation of Vayaslam batim. So we're not getting any help here. All right, let's go to the Midrash. The Midrash, Rav Velevi, charamar batei kuna batei leviyah, v'charamar batei malchut. So if Machlok at Rav and Levi, what houses did he make for them? Are they the houses of Cohen and Levi or the houses of royalty? Meaning, how are Rav and Levi interpreting Batim? Not as physical buildings, but as households. And who is Vayas clearly? God. And Lahem seems to be the Mialdot. And the notion is, after all, according to the tradition, that Yocheved is one of the Mialdot. That's Cohen and Levi. And according to tradition that Miriam's the other one, they have another Midrashic tradition that Miriam's descendants end up in David's family and the king Amatziah is a descendant of Miriam. What? So either one, right. All right, and we have a support for that, the Midrash bring. And Rashi quotes this, but Rashi does something interesting with this Midrash. By the way, lots and lots of people have done their studies and people have written doctorates on this topic of how Rashi uses Midrash. How Rashi adopts a Midrash, but how he edits a Midrash, and what he does in his commentary. And so Rashi here says, batim kuna ulivia umachut. What did he do? He takes Rav and Levi and puts them into one, shekriyin batim. And then he proves that kuhuna, levia, and royalty are all called houses. Vayivin et beit Adonai et beit HaMelech, kuhuna ulivia miyocheved umachut mi Miriam. Right? All right, so far it's all in traditional path, but is that the only way for us to go? No, because there's other traditional paths. Take a look at the Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra says as follows. Vayas lahem batim, ketam ki bayit yasalach Adonai. Now, who's that? That is the Navi to David. And there, the bayit isn't a physical house. It's lineage, dynasty. Vatam shehirba zaram. Aha. What does that mean? In other words, God gave the Mialdot lots of kids. Not meaning that they were going to be the ancestresses of royalty, but that they would be the mothers of a lot of kids. And it's a perfect poetic justice. Hagmul tagmul sachar shechiyu min hinzera Yisrael. Because they themselves kept alive Jewish kids, they had lots of kids. By the way, who's Vayas here? God. Who's Lahem? The Mialdot. What are Batim? Big families. Who are the Mialdot, according to Ibn Ezra? They're Egyptians. Look at the language. They get a reward for keeping alive Jewish kids. Right? V'yomar ha-Gaon, and then he quotes, evidently, Sadi Gaon, Ki asa lahem batim she'istiram sham v'lo nimtzau. Whoa. Whole different take. Now what's a bayit? A building. And that Hashem somehow allowed them to build buildings where they could hide and not be found by Paro. Right? Okay.
The kids or the mother?
The Mialdot. Now let's keep going. Because, and by the way, the very fact that Ibn Ezra quotes a commentary and then gives another commentary should be tip-off number one. Here's tip-off number two to how difficult these three words are. By the way, look at the page, and I had to go really small print, and I did not cover nearly everybody who's commenting on this at all. All right? The Chizkuni, Rabbi Chezkiah bar Manoach from Provence, says the following. Vayas lahem. So the first thing he addresses is the problem of lahem with a mem. Sometimes when it's women, we use Lashon Zachar. Who's talking? Yaakov is talking to Rachel and Leah. And he refers to Levan as Avichem, even though it should be Avichen. And Vayavo Haroim Vayigarshum, that is Zipporah and her six sisters get chased away by the shepherds, and Zipporah and her six sisters are all girls, and it says, Vayigashumu the mem. Okay. Ve'on harbe. So the Chizkuna says, don't get bothered by the grammar. Batim elu banim. So he takes the same position as Ibn Ezra. It's not dynasties, it's kids. Shebanav shaladam nikra bayit. Good. K'moshu atzinu with David, etc. Now, Afkan natan lahem banim v'olechem v'resh ketzad. And then it says that they had kids. Davar acher. Now, by the way, the davar acher right away should tip you off. The Chizkuna is also saying, I got two different ways to interpret it. Which means, unclear. Vayaslem paro batim. What is Chizkuna's position here? Who's Vayas? Paro made houses for them. And now we would assume if Paro's making houses, that's physical buildings. La'amod bam v'lo yu zazot mehem. Paro made houses where the midwives have to stay and they can't leave, essentially imprisoning them. Why? And so now, if you were an Ivriah and you were giving birth, you were forced. You go to that house. And the midwife was locked in that house, and therefore there was no such thing as had giving birth early or anything like that. That's the Chizkuna, yeah.
Why is that an effect of Kiyar Ulmi Al-Dot? I mean, like, that would be the cause and then effect, but why is that? Why Paro made the house? The
because, so you'd say, what?
They didn't fear him. They feared
God, and they were not doing their job, so he had to force their job. Right, exactly.
How can you say they lived among the people? You have a slave population. They're going to live all over the country. They have to go to work, and they have to be rounded up.
Well, evidently, they were kept in one, more or less, one area. You get, again, the same problem of who are these two? And we're going to address all those things. Okay. You turn the page, and you see that there is no end of different approaches to this. The Mecklenburg, 19th century, Octava Kabbalah, Yaakov Mecklenburg. But I want to take you to the 11th century. You know, Midrashim, we think of Midrashim as the period of the Gemara, but Midrashim continue to be composed much later, through the Middle Ages. And we have a Midrashic collection. Some of the collections we have that are later are actually collections of earlier Midrashim that are compiled, but some of them are being composed later. So we have a Midrash that's known as Lekach Tov. This is 11th century, and a student had a Midrash called Sechel Tov. And these are, for the most part, compilations. It's otherwise known as the Psikta Zutrata. And in this portion, just look at the highlighted part. He says, "Anmad v'tikein batim la'mitzriim." This is a chiddush. He says, first of all, who made houses? Paro. Who did Paro make the houses for? For the Egyptians, not for the midwives. And by the way, that explains what problem. Lahem. Meaning, Paro moved the Egyptians into the Jewish neighborhoods.
Oh,
now you start to understand now how things changed from Goshen. Why? Kevan shenolad ben liYisrael, hein margishim bahem. So you have a Jewish kid, but you have right next to you, and they suddenly have an Egyptian neighbor. And they suddenly start hearing a baby crying. And they check into it. And then what happens?
Like the Holocaust. Exactly.
Shari tinok boche. Right? So we have a little Egyptian baby in our house, and next door there's a Jewish family. The woman is pregnant. Right? A couple days later, we don't see her anymore. But my kid, here's that kid crying. My kid starts crying. That's a siman. We go in, grab the kid, and throw him in the water. Right? Watch what his student, the Sechel Tov, says. He says, Vayas lahem la'mitzriim batim. Now watch what his point is. He picks up on the Chizkuni and turns him inside. Remember the Chizkuni said, Lahem, Lahem, Nishkefelach. He turns around and flips it. Watch what he says. This is an amazing statement elsewhere in Torah. Vayas lahem mitzrim batim, shrei lo katav lahem lashon nekeva. It doesn't say Vayas lahem batim, which would be the Mialdot. It must be for the Egyptians. Lahem batim. Ela lahem lashon zachar. Melamed shamad v'tiken batim lemitzrim. Samuch Batei Yisrael, right? And I'm trying to see wherever it is. At some point he actually says that that has an impact actually on how we read the story at at Kriyat Yam Suf, right? Or Tam Lahem Miryam. You notice we have a lot of different approaches in this. There's more. Read them, take them home. But I want to suggest something that comes from a particular methodological position, which we've used in the past, and that will not only shed light on the question of what Vayaslam Batim and make a suggestion of what it means, but also the problem of how the Jews are living there. Who are these Mialdot? Two women, Mialdot, everybody, how's that working? Right? And what kind of Batim there are. If you notice, the title of the shiur is HaMialdot HaYivriyot, and then in small print, V'HaMa'amar HaMusgar. Ma'amar Musgar really means a parenthetic statement. Now, parenthetic statement, imagine how you use parentheses. Right? You're writing a sentence, and you're saying, this afternoon at shiur, my good friend Bill, and then in parentheses I'll put Bill Goldstein, the well-known Grammy-winning musician, close parentheses, was sitting next to me in chair, as he always does on my left side. I don't put that as part of the statement. I put it in parentheses. What's the purpose of the parenthetic statement? To shed light on what's going on outside without interfering with the flow of the sentence. We have a Ma'amar Musgar often in Tanakh. I'll give you one quick example that we all know. And that is at the end of the book of Ruth. The end of the book of Ruth, Boaz and the Goel are standing at the court. And Boaz says what he does. The Goel says, I'll buy it. Boaz then says, you're going to buy it. You got to marry Ruth. Goel says, I'm backing out. And then we have this parenthetic statement that says, in the old days, when a person would make any sort of a deal or confirm a transaction, he would take off his shoe. We don't know who would take off whose shoe, but he would take off his shoe. The next sentence says, the Goel says to Boaz, okay, it's yours, and he takes off his shoe. We don't know, but what's the purpose of the parenthetic statement? Because the reader has no idea what a shoe has to do with anything. It says, oh, telling you that that's how they would make transactions. Okay, so it's there for that purpose. We have such a thing actually right above the story of the Mialdot. Take a look at source 19. You didn't think we'd get that far. Mm. Take a look at source 19. This is when Paro first stirs up the people. Hava nitchak malo. We should act wisely with this people, or this army. Pen yirbev, ayaki tukana melchamano safkam huel sonenu. They might increase and join our enemies. V'nilcham banu v'ala min haaretz. Right? And they will fight against us. And they will leave the land. Everybody's bothered by that phrase, they will leave the land. What do you care? Let them leave the land. Hava nitchak malo. Let's act wisely. Okay, so that's the sentence, and that's a very difficult sentence.
That's before there was slavery.
This is what starts the slavery. Yeah. The Sforno, to solve this problem, says, read the middle part of the sentence as a parenthesis. That's what he says. He says, read it as follows. Hava nitchak malo v'alamin haaretz. Let's act wisely with them and get them to leave. Basically, let's make Egypt very uncomfortable for them, and they'll leave. And you imagine if you have people who for the last 3-4 generations have been in the elite, the top 1% of wealth, the only landowners in the country besides the priests, etc., etc., and suddenly you start degrading them, they're going to say, what I did this for? I can take all my wealth and go. You would think so. So the parenthetic statement is, what's his reason for wanting them to leave? Is we're afraid that they will form a fifth column. So in other words, V'ala min ha'aretz is not what he's afraid of, it's what he wants. And his middle part of the sentence is the reason for that.
Does he have any reasons?
I keep that in mind, and now let's look at our piece. I'm going to read our piece a little differently. It's at the bottom of the page, you can read it from the top, but I'm going to read it a little differently. I'm going to skip something, you'll see. I'm going to skip a lot. V'yomer Mildot HaYivriyot, Asheshem Achat Shifra V'Shem Ashenit Puah. These are two of the Egyptian women who serve as midwives. V'yomer Lachanat HaYivriyot, when you birth them, Uriten Al Ha'ovnaim. Right? And by the way, these are two of the midwives who operate in the cities. like you said, the Egyptians are all over. Jews are in different places. There are Jews living in the rural area because they're working on constructing new cities. So there's Jews there also. He speaks to the women who are in the city. What does he say? Wait, go when you see the baby and you're in birth. In ben hu maiteno tov mati b'chaya. If it's a boy, kill him. If it's a girl, let her live. Vayas lahem batim. Look at it again. Vim bati b'chaya, vayas lahem batim. So what does Paro do? He sets up birthing centers. Right? In other words, Paro's plan is, I want the midwives to kill the boys. So I'm going to set up birthing centers. Where's that going to work? That's going to work in the cities where they have the midwives and they go to them. What's going to happen outside? In the meantime, this is not a sequential order. This is a parallel order, a contemporaneous order. He says at the same time, Paro issues a decree to the people, which is that any boy who's born, throw him in the river. So in other words, the women in the cities have a house to go to. They go to the house. There's an Egyptian midwife there who's the midwife of the Hebrews, gives birth, and the boys are killed quietly as they're being born. In the meantime, out in the country, we don't have that kind of control. Say, okay, if you find out about a Jewish boy, it's born, you throw him in the river. What's the parenthetic statement in the middle? And you take a look at it, the outside section is Paro's decree. What's the inside section? Look at it. V'tir'ena mi'adot et Elohim. Step one, the women feared God. They didn't follow Paro's order. They kept the boys alive. And now, look underneath that pasuk chaf. God is good with these women. Which means, by the way, their business is booming. The Jewish women are having more kids. And as midwives, they're making more money. And the nation becomes big. Notice the end of pasuk, that part of pasuk chaf, and the beginning of Yitzayin, same thing. The women feared God. That's bookends. That ties it together. And what's in the middle of it? In the middle of it is a conversation between Paro and the Mialdot. Paro says to the Mialdot, why'd you do this? And they give their lie, which is the women give birth before we get to them. Right? Okay. Which means that the women come in, and by the time I come out to come to the house to, right? So this actually supports the Chizkuni's position more strongly. Vayaslam Batim is simply Paro setting up houses for this to take place as part of his decree. If I have all the Jewish women who live in the city come to this place to give birth, I'll have control, and the women, if they follow my orders, will kill all the boys. The women refuse to do it, and they make up this story that by the time we get there, the women have already given birth. But the houses are Paro's houses that he set up for this. And now we understand why it is that when we left Yosef and his bones at the end of Bereishit, the Jews are living, the Hebrews are living in Goshen, and now suddenly they have their neighbors, and they're borrowing gold from each other, their neighbors, and the plague is one house up next to the other, is because Paro deliberately integrated them. And why did he deliberately integrate them? In order to be able to carry out this decree. And suddenly all the things that we asked at the beginning, all those loose threads, hopefully come together and we get a better picture of not only Paro's plans, but his motivation, but also we have to step back and we have to read the psukim more carefully and see what part is actually what is happening, what part is like the internal thinking that is driving it.